Rookie Fever, the show that looks closely at NFL rookie values all year long.
Hurry up!
With your hosts, Swagzilla Zero G.
We can't all be winners.
Mike, the feverish Fanero.
It's never in a vacuum! Nothing is in a vacuum!
And FF underscore spaceman.
And he's trying to trick me by supporting vacated targets as if they're a real thing.
David Wright. The Rookie Fever Podcast.
We're just having fun and we're working, baby. That's it.
Ready to come. Wait, wait.
Welcome back to Rookie Fever. I am here with Drew this week. You know him as at DF Bean Counter. We are going to talk a little bit of Seth Williams this afternoon. But before that, we got to talk a little bit about Drew. I want a little bit of background from you, Drew. I know we've got kind of a newer podcast out. We should be talking about a little bit. Bulletproof Dynasty Football, right? Or is it fantasy? Yep. It's just fantasy football.
Fantasy football, yeah.
So I want to talk a little bit about Bulletproof. I want to talk a little bit about what you're doing. We all know you're grinding the numbers. The hell's been going on, Drew? You're busy. I see you everywhere.
Yeah, I've been very busy this rookie season, that's for sure.
Yeah, so thanks for making time, dude, first of all.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely. Yeah, we got the new podcast, though, Bulletproof Fantasy Football, where I'm just diving into like 3 players a week. 10 minutes per player kind of thing, 7 to 10 minutes. It's usually a 20 to 30 minute podcast. It's just me ranting, basically.
You've got one that I'll be tuning into very soon, and we won't get into it because Rookie Fever Nation will get mad at me, but you're talking about James Robinson. So I've got to hear how you feel about James Robinson pretty quick here.
Yeah, I just did him this week, actually. The YouTube video on it will come out next week, so that might be a good one to watch. Like, I have the YouTube channel and the podcast, and then I basically just take I have a guy that does it for me, so I don't know how to do any of the technical stuff, because I'm old, I guess. I'm a boomer.
Same,
so I got, I do the podcast, and then he cuts the segments and puts them into individual videos, and he puts graphics with it to show all the stuff that I'm talking about, so you can visualize what I'm saying. Because when you're talking about numbers, it's awfully hard to keep track of it in your head sometimes.
Yeah.
So, yeah, the video is going to be out next week. But James Robinson is someone that I would look to – spoiler alert, I would look to sell him because don't see players like him last. And this isn't like a take-lock thing. I have receipts on May 4th last year. I told the patrons, go and get James Robinson on waivers after your rookie draft. So, like, I'm not, like, a take-lock guy where, you know, I didn't like him to begin with. Like, I was like, hey, we got to get him. Go get him. Everybody go get him. And now I'm like, you know what? His value, like, I don't think he's a bad player by any stretch, but his value is in a place where I feel like you can pivot to guys that we just have a lot more confidence are going to be there 3 years from now or 2 years from now. So it's not really I hate James Robinson thing. It's just when you look at every player, like, day three – to undrafted wide or running backs, it just isn't great. Yeah. And I'm talking about like popped as rookies. Like Alfred Morris was like the best rookie running back maybe ever. And he never had another top 12 season in his entire career.
Yeah, he was okay that second season. But then Alfred Morris is a good example. I might dislike you for that example for a moment. So I have like, trouble parting ways with my James Robinson shares, okay?
Well, Alfred Morris had like 1,600 rushing yards. He had like a 91 PFF grade. Like there was no indication that he would not be around for the long term. Like he looked like he belonged and then he just wasn't. And if you go down the list of the top, you know, day three or undrafted free agent rookie running backs that popped, it just isn't inspiring.
Philip Lindsay's
another. He had like the same amount of rushing yards as James Robinson did in a lot less favorable situation. So that's just one of those things where if he was priced where you can't get someone else that would be very appealing, then I think you should hold. But you can get someone else where there is a lot more long-term upside, I guess, is the way to put it. Or a lot safer long-term.
So I got to ask, like, when did you get into crunching numbers the way you did? And how did all of this start? Like, are you in a lot of Devy leagues or – just crunching the numbers on these guys for us.
Yeah, so I think I wrote my first ever article in 2017. So it's been a few years. wasn't very good. But I wrote it, and it's out there, but it wasn't very good. I wouldn't follow that advice exactly anymore. But, you know, I've improved a lot over the years is maybe the way to put it. But yeah, I started playing Dynasty Fantasy Football. I've always been into that kind of thing. Like when I played Madden, I never actually played the games. I just like simulated the whole season, building the team. Like that was that was always my thing. That NFL head coach game with like Bill. No, who was it? Was it Coward on the front of it? I can't remember. Coach for the Steelers, I'm pretty sure, was on the front of it. And you don't even, they didn't even let you play the games in that game. And I was all about that game. So like that, this like team building thing has always been an interest of mine. Started playing Dynasty back in 2014, I think, or maybe 15. And it just kind of took off. Found a player profiler and started getting into analytics and just kept going from there.
And now he's the bean counter.
Yeah. And you asked about Devy. I didn't start playing Devy until 2 or 3 years ago. Ray GQ put out like a call for a tape versus data analyst league. And I was like, well, that's a cool concept. I'll try that out. He forgot to mention that it was Devy in his Twitter ad. So I just signed up and then he's like, oh, it's the Devy League. I'm like, I don't know how to play Devy. I don't play Devy in my life.
He's like, you'll probably be fine.
Probably the wrong kind of Devy League to start out with. A bunch of analysts like Ray and like Matt Hicks is in it and Devy Kane. And like there's a bunch of Angelo FF and like there's a bunch of like superstars in this league. And here's me like trying to sort my way through how to play Devy. It was I think my team's pretty good, but it was a real learning experience. And then from there, it was like there's nobody doing like analytics Devy rankings. And last year I was like, you know what? I'm playing Devy. I have my own rankings. I might as well, you know, put them out there for people. So I do Devy rankings on Patreon now. I'm still figuring out the best way to do the process on it because we're working with, you know, incomplete profiles. It's not like film where you can turn it on and watch the player play 17 snaps and get a feel for how good they are. Yeah. We need actual data to make a decision on these players. So the Devy rankings are an entirely different beast. And I totally get why a lot of data analysts don't do Devy rankings because it's different and it's a lot harder. But, you know, we're still able to pinpoint the guys that we probably shouldn't be drafting in Devy leagues anyway.
Yeah.
So,
well, we appreciate you for doing it. I mean, that's for sure. And it's kind of one of those things too, that once you're doing it for yourself, why don't I take this one step further and share it with people? Cause this is a lot of work that I just did for me.
Yeah, exactly.
And so it's, I think I love it, man. Good to get it out there. And myself included, I can tell you're appreciated by the community. We talked really quick about like some of those not so pleasant people we might run into that aren't as appreciative, but they're few and far between. It's just so easy to glorify the negative people versus like the positive. But I think there's a lot more positive out there. I can definitely tell people appreciate you. So
yeah, no, it's good to hear. Like once in a while, I get a message on Twitter that's like, thanks. Like you helped me get so-and-so, or you turned me on to this player when I was soured on him or that kind of thing. And it's nice to get that kind of feedback. Like somebody had tweeted the other day, might've been around the same time the guy told me to boil my phone, that he feels like he's got the answer key or something by following me. I'm like, oh, thanks, man. Like that's why we do it, right? Like we want to help people get better at fantasy football. So when people give that feedback, it's really appreciated and it makes you want to keep going.
Is
and then when people tell you to boil your phone,
your phone a thing? Like, I mean,
I don't know.
It was all hilarious. Hatred aside, that's pretty clever.
It was years ago, like when Dwayne Haskins, I think when he was a prospect or maybe after his rookie year, maybe it was last year. I can't remember. This guy like DM'd me like a bunch of vulgarities and boil my phone. And I was like, what? Boil my phone? Like I got young kids, man. You can't have boiling water everywhere. You gotta be careful. Can I just put it in room temperature
the water? Toilet or something? Like mellow out.
Yeah,
took it a step so further. Now I have to prep to drop my phone in water,
right? And then I completely forgot about this guy, and then yesterday he pops up. Well, I'm assuming it's the same guy, it's a different account, but somebody told me to boil my phone again yesterday. I'm like, nobody has said this in the history of the world.
Exactly.
It's gotta be the same guy with a new account.
That is awesome.
Yeah, so it's been fun.
It's his thing. It's his clever thing. He's overusing it. Probably everybody in his life has heard it so many times.
Oh, yeah, totally.
So let's hop into this player profile.
Sure.
Rookie Fevers. Rookie Player Profile Edition.
Okay, I've got to ask. why did you choose Seth Williams?
So, like we were just talking about with Debbie, one of the main things we're looking for is the early production, right? Seth Williams broke out as a freshman at Auburn playing with NFL players. That matters to me. So now that we're in his rookie season and he's getting almost no hype, I'm like, we're missing something. Like, is he really that bad at football that he went to Auburn and broke out as a freshman and then dominated the next two consecutive years? Like, he's never not dominated at a major school? Like, what are we missing here? So, and he's like 6'3", 211 pounds, and runs like a 4.5 something, 4.5, 4.40. So, like, he's not a non-athlete. This isn't a Kelvin Harmon type situation, I don't think. Maybe it is. But, he just has a lot of appeal to me based on the things that I look at. And then when you look at where his price tag is in rookie drafts right now, he's even more appealing. He's
rarely mentioned, to be honest. You'll see people's rankings and you don't see Seth Williams.
Yeah, he's going, I think, middle of the third round in Superflex leagues. And I'm like he grades out, well, spoiler alert, he grades out as a coin flip prospect to me, which is just incredible, given the price that we can pay for him. Like an alpha, he's an alpha profile, which is a new thing I'm kind of factoring into my rankings, is the alpha versus beta body type, I guess. He's an alpha coin flip, which is like, coin flips have like a 50% chance at a top 24 season. So he's got like a reasonable floor. We usually see these guys in the first round of Dynasty rookie drafts, and we can get them in the third round. And then you factor in the alpha side of it, the Auburn side of it, and it's like, wow, I have a hard time believing that he's not a very good football player. And maybe he is, and maybe the NFL draft will come by and you know, he won't get drafted on day two. And then I'm like, okay, well, we're done with Seth Williams. Now he's Gabriel Davis. Let's move on.
Oh, we'll like target Gabriel. I don't think that's that bad.
I just did a thread on Gabriel Davis like a month ago, and I got just torn apart about my analysis of Gabriel Davis and how I'm treating him unfairly, because I'm treating him as a third round or a day three pick. And I'm like, well, he was a day three pick. What do you want me to do with him? Like, I'm sorry. Nobody thought that he was worth round three pick. They just didn't. I can't change their minds. The NFL scouts have spoken.
But he had a pretty decent year one for a day three pick.
He did have a pretty decent year one for a day three pick. But when you look at only day three picks and what happens when they have pretty decent day three pick, first years, it's terrible. Like when you comp him based on his points per game, which isn't entirely fair all the time with rookies, because not every rookie situation is the same, right? But he didn't do that well. And then you look at like his per play efficiency or his per play grade from Player Profiler. It's fine. It's not great. And when you look at all of the day three picks that have ever had the same kind of range of points per game, the same range of PFF grade, and then you look at how they perform throughout their careers, there isn't a single hit of top 24 on his entire comp list. Not other than Julian Edelman, who was a quarterback in college. He didn't even play wide receiver. So it's just like, sure, he might hit, but holy smokes, we've seen this time and time and time again where a day three guy pops is kind of impressive, and then they just don't do anything because they're just not really all that good to begin with. And if they were good, they wouldn't be day three picks.
Yeah, so I wanted to ask you, for people that aren't as familiar with Seth Williams, I did want to kind of try to get a comp. I'm not a huge fan of comparisons, but do you have would Gabriel Davis be your comp? It sounds like you're higher on Seth Williams than Gabriel Davis.
I just picked Gabriel Davis because he had a pretty good profile that fell to day three, and he's popular among a lot of buy low or buy high types out there right now.
I know you mentioned Matt Hicks, and I know Hicks loves Gabriel Davis.
Yeah, a lot of guys do. And like I said, I understand the appeal. He had a good rookie year for a day three pick, but when we look at it over the grand scheme of the last 20 years of day three picks that had the same type of rookie year, it's really nothing to sink your teeth into. So if you can get like a second round pick for him, I'd do it. But with Seth Williams, so kind of how I do it is I take their height and their BMI and find a range around his height and BMI to get a comp list of players. So on the high end, we're looking at like he physically comps to guys like Michael Thomas, AJ Green, Keenan Allen, Braylon Edwards, Kenny Golladay, Devontae Parker. Those would be the top 12 guys or the guys that have gone on to have top 12 seasons. So that's the kind of upside that he has, which is obviously really, really good. When we look at some of the smaller guys, we don't get that kind of upside. Like there's just few and far between where they hit like a Michael Thomas, AJ Green, Keenan Allen, type of range. And keep in mind, Keenan Allen was a round three pick, and Kenny Golladay was a round three pick. So we're not really getting crazy with these kind of size comps. In fact, both those guys, Keenan Allen and Kenny Golladay, they both fall into my coin flip alpha tiers, which is exactly where Seth Williams is. Now, they don't alternate like that. Don't get me wrong.
Right, right.
There's all those guys that didn't hit in that range. But if you can get a guy with that kind of upside in round three, it's a no-brainer, in my opinion.
It's crazy to look back at Keenan Allen as a round three wide receiver.
I think that the reason that he was because he ran like a 4.7 40 or something. Because I think he ran it when he was hurt. And like I wasn't doing this back in 2013 when Keenan Allen came out, so I can't really speak to that exactly. But according to everything that I look at, he's a genuine stud prospect. He just happens to fall to day three, which knocks him out of my bulletproof tier. Or round three, pardon me, not day three, which knocks him out of my bulletproof tier, puts him into the coin flip tier with, you know, another guy that's like that is Chris Godwin, who has like a perfect profile, but just fell to round three. So he gets knocked down a notch. And there's a bunch of guys that didn't hit that are in that range. So that's why those guys get dropped down, because bulletproof pre-draft bulletproof players that get drafted on round three actually don't hit at the rate that round one and two bulletproof players hit. So they don't get to be in the same tier. But yeah, Keenan Allen, like, there's nothing to look at his profile and say, well, he wasn't very good in college. Like, he was absolutely everything that we would look for. He checked every single box. He was, I think he was an 18-year-old breakout, if I recall correctly. He dominated every year he was in college. He came out. He was an early declare that came out at 21. He was a 21-year-old rookie. Like, there's nothing to not like about Keenan Allen other than his crazy slow 40 time, which I'm pretty sure was like 4.69 or 4.70 or somewhere thereabouts.
So yeah. With a player like Seth Williams, and once you start crunching the numbers, what are you looking for? You mentioned BMI, you mentioned his size. What are you looking for to make you feel good about his success at the next level in the NFL?
I am looking for a number of different things. The first thing that I'm looking for is early declare. Like, if a player is good at football, the NFL will say, we're going to draft you high enough, come on out. More often than not, sometimes early declares do fall to round or day three, but usually they're day two or what day one picks. So that's like a really easy first checkbox for Seth Williams. He wasn't an early declare. I look for consistent domination is really what it comes down to. I want players that go to college and prove that they're the best player on their team. If you're not the best player on your college team, you're probably not going to be the best player on your NFL team.
Right.
NFL is a lot harder than college, obviously.
Yeah, maybe not so even the second best player or wide receiver.
Yeah, so if you're not like the alpha on your college team, why would anyone think that you're going to be the alpha on your NFL team?
Yeah.
And don't get me wrong, it happens. We get players that don't perform in college that do perform in the NFL, but it's so rare that it's just like, why would you ever bet on that?
Yeah.
So with Seth Williams, if you look at actually, let's go back to early declare for a second. There's a guy on Twitter. His name is @AmITheRealBlair. And he writes for RotoViz, and he is probably one of the smartest people on the fantasy football landscape, in my opinion. He does this thing called The Wrong Read. It's like an article series that he does on RotoViz, and it is incredible. Just plug for him. He doesn't do much on Twitter, but like his articles are top-notch. He did a thing a couple years ago where he looked at the early declare PPR points in the first two seasons, and early declares hit at like just an astronomical rate compared to seniors. Like, it's astronomical. And so anyway, that's why like early declare matters to me, those kinds of things. And then when we look at production, like I mentioned earlier, Seth Williams is a first year breakout. He wasn't an age 18 year old breakout because he didn't play at 18. He came to college at 19, but he broke out in his first year, and he did it with Darius Slayton, who in my opinion isn't a great NFL player, but he's an NFL player. And Seth Williams was, I think, 2 or 3 years younger. Well, Seth Williams was a freshman and Darius Slayton was a senior. And Seth Williams went toe-to-toe with him in the receiving yards department. Like, they were almost identical. So to me, that is telling me that this guy is an NFL player at the very least, because Darius Slayton is an NFL player. So it's very hard for me to rationalize away that Seth Williams isn't an NFLer.
I wonder, do you think Seth Williams could end up being one of those players that after we see a landing spot, he maybe his ADP moves up into at least the second round of our rookie drafts rather than the third, like you're saying you're seeing in some of these cases? Do you have an idea of a landing spot that could propel him to those, I don't know, I don't want to say expectations, but he needs an opportunity.
Yeah, I think right now the big hesitation is a lot of A lot of film people think that he's going to be a day three pick, and that's bringing down his ADP quite a bit because they're really not interested in him. Even a lot of analytics people don't seem to be that interested in him, which I find kind of perplexing. Like, I don't really see – I don't know what they're not seeing in his profile that is keeping them away, unless they're looking at – you know, he's right on the – like, if you look at a website like Grinding the Mocks, where they take, like, expert mock draft – like, NFL mock drafts, expert NFL mock drafts – like the industry experts and things like that, and they basically do like an ADP of NFL draft capital. Seth Williams is like right on the fringe of round three, round four. So it could go either way for him, and I think maybe that's what's keeping people off of him a little bit. But then at the same time, I'm like, but analytics people are pumping up Jamar Jefferson, who's going to go in like round seven, so maybe that isn't it. I don't really know. Or who's the other kid that I can't remember. There's a bunch of like guys that have no chance of being drafted on day two that a lot of analytics folks are really into. And I'm like, they're just not going to get draft capital, man. Like, nobody is talking about them in round two. It ain't going to happen. Yeah. Whereas with Seth Williams, some people are talking about him in round three. So it could happen. He could be Kenny Golladay in this class. Like, that's where I'm kind of going with the Seth Williams profile. As far as landing spots, I don't – like, anywhere that isn't – honestly, I don't think there's a landing spot that I really – for me, doesn't really change anything. For other people, I mean, if he lands in any of the like pristine landing spots, like in, you know, Kansas City or Green Bay or, you know, any of those high volume with excellent quarterbacks that need a wide receiver too, if he lands somewhere like that, I can see him getting pumped up. Like Mecole Hardman landed in Kansas City and he friggin' skyrocketed to the first round of rookie drafts. And that was obviously based on a player that was terrible. Like he did nothing in college. Seth Williams actually dominated three straight years and he's big and fast and like there's nothing to dislike about Seth Williams other than perhaps draft capital. And even like in the Devy sense, like I said, I've been kind of on him because he broke out as a freshman out of like major school with NFL players. So in Devy, if Devy Watch is one of the guides that I buy every year because I think they do an excellent job. They're primarily film based as far as I can tell anyway. And last year in Devy Watch, they're like, his weakness is like focus drops, like inconsistency. I'm like, that's his only weakness, is that he's inconsistent? Like, what if he puts it together?
Yeah.
Like, what if he's really good outside of the few plays where he's really bad, like if his ceiling is way up here and his floor is way down here, we should be taking him in the late second, early third, if on the off chance that he does put it together. Like, if he doesn't have a true weakness in his game, other than just being inconsistent, what if he puts it together? He could be Kenny Golladay.
Yeah,
that's kind of where.
and with that said, I don't want to misspeak for you, but one of the questions I have within my show sheet is the player's ceiling and floor. I feel like you've given his ceiling as like a Keenan Allen or Kenny Golladay type, and his floor as a Gabriel Davis. Is that fair?
I think that's probably somewhere fair. I don't think that he's not an NFLer. I'll put it that way. Like, I don't think he's gonna, you know, completely bust out of the league like Hakeem Butler did. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't think that's what's in the cards, or J.J. Arcega-White said. Like, I don't think he's that type of player. He was a lot better in college than those guys. But, like a Gabriel Davis where he's just, like, maybe, like, a nice role player, I think that could be the case very easily. But and like, even, honestly, Keenan Allen. Like, I don't think Seth Williams has that Keenan Allen, you know, perennial top five wide receiver type upside. I mean, maybe he will, but I wouldn't be expecting it. I think he's more of a Kenny Golladay. I think that's really what his ceiling probably looks like.
That's a damn nice ceiling.
Yeah, it is. It is a really nice ceiling.
Yeah. How do you feel like
Kenny Golladay is going in this range of the draft as well?
Yeah.
So yep. It fits.
How do you feel like about the consensus within the community on Seth Williams?
I think everyone's way too low on him. I think they're looking at his floor. I think he's being ranked on his floor. And I think that's a huge mistake. Like, we have like Kadarius Toney being, you know, like going well ahead of Seth Williams in rookie drafts, and Kadarius Toney, like, he could be out of the league in 3 years. He absolutely could be. He could face plant like Hakeem Butler did. Like, he could just
so be weird. Yeah, it's so crazy how we do that. Like, so many people you see being valued at their ceiling, and then there's so many other people that are just neglected.
Yeah,
I'm starting to think Seth Williams is one of those guys. Would you say he's your guy? Like, within this rookie class, do you have somebody that you, maybe not only Seth Williams, but somebody that you feel like you're higher on than consensus?
Do I think I'm higher on than consensus? I think that the guy that I'm probably higher on than consensus is Ja'Marr Chase, actually, but that's kind of a cop out because I think he's the 101 and by a long ways in one QB leagues. Like, I don't think there's even a conversation for anyone else at the 101. I think it's him and it's absolutely no one else. I have him ranked at like wide receiver 8 or something in my dynasty rankings right now.
Wow. Okay.
Well, like,
and that means something. Like, startup value compared to rookie value is completely different. So for me to know that he's in like your top 8 in startup value, that means a lot.
Yeah. So it's funny to say I'm higher than consensus on Ja'Marr Chase when I think his ADP is 102 when I have him at 101. It doesn't feel like I'm higher than consensus on Ja'Marr Chase.
And that's what I was going to say when you said that, is just like, well, everybody loves Ja'Marr Chase. But then for me, like when you turned it to startup value, I was like, okay, yes, you are probably higher on him than consensus. So I love it. I think that's a great example. I like that you took it that direction, honestly, because a lot of times, like, I think we overvalue some rookie picks just within the conversations of them, and we tend to forget that within the startup sometimes, like, if you're talking like 105 to 107, that could be 20 to 40 picks in a startup.
Absolutely.
So for me to understand your ranking in a startup, I mean, yeah, that definitely helps me picture how much you like him, and that's saying a lot. He's definitely my wide receiver 1 in the class, I'll tell you that, but it's so hard for me to put him there. But I love it, dude. I do. What about somebody you're maybe a little bit lower on within this class?
Oh, I mean, I'm lower on consensus than most on like the Alabama players, like Devonta Smith and Jalen Waddle. Like, Devonta Smith, some people have at the wide receiver 1 or in the conversation at wide receiver 1. I have him at like wide receiver 5 or something. I don't hate his profile. Like, I don't think he's undraftable. Like, I don't think he's Henry Ruggs.
Right.
But I think he's Jerry Jeudy is really what I think he is. He's not a bad player. I didn't hate Jerry Jeudy either. I don't love them in the way that other people love them, is the way to put it. Like, Jerry Jeudy, I think wide receiver 5 maybe last year for me or something. He was wide receiver 1-2 in consensus last year. So similar with Devonta Smith this year. Like, I think that Devonta Smith has a solid floor because he's a good football player. There's no questioning he's a good football player. That's not where the issue is for me. It's what's his ceiling. And when we look at players like him, we just don't have a ceiling. And I'm not talking like at 22.3 BMI or whatever his BMI is. I'm talking like anyone under 26. Like, there's a huge class of players under 26 that just don't hit a ceiling. Unless they're huge, like AJ Green. Like, it's always funny. I put up these like alpha beta things. I should maybe just define that for everyone because I keep talking about it. So I do alpha beta for my wide receivers. I give them an alpha designation or a beta designation. It's all based on size. And it's not necessarily just a BMI. I also, the criteria you use is you have to be 5'11 or taller, to be 195 pounds or heavier, and you have to be a 26 BMI or higher. And it's not perfect. Don't get me wrong. It's not perfect. Like, Antonio Brown is. But Antonio Brown doesn't fit in anything. He was a six-round pick that nobody liked. Like, get out of here if you're trying to chase Antonio Brown. Tyreek Hill, same thing. He doesn't fit in this. But again, like, he was a fifth-round pick. We weren't chasing him in the first place. So when we look at this, so over the grand scheme of all the players, we tend to see the alpha profiles, the larger players, hit top 12 much more frequently than the smaller beta players. And in fantasy football, if you're getting a player that can – And sorry to back up for a second, but when we look at top 24 hit rates, they're very comparable. Like, there's not a lot of difference between the floor between a low BMI player or a small player and a large player. The floor is very similar. They both hit top 24 roughly the same rate. And once you control for like prospect quality, like if we're talking bulletproof versus bulletproof, alpha versus beta, the floor is basically the same, but the ceiling is way different for the alphas. Same thing with coin flip wide receivers. I should probably talk about my tiers as well. I guess I keep talking about them. So I have different tiers. We have bulletproof, coin flip, long shot, and bust. Those are the four grades. And there's like transcendent and generational above bulletproof that are like for the extremely extreme players. Not very many players in those tiers. But I look at every player's profile across the board and slot these players into different grades. And those grades represent a hit rate bucket. So the Bulletproof Plus players are like 75% hit rate at, or more, depending on the position, at top 24 wide receiver finishes. The coin flips hit at roughly, I think it's like 46 or 44%, somewhere in there.
Okay.
And then the long shots are like a 25% or 20, somewhere in 20, 25. And then the bust tier players are like 8 to 15. depending on the position. Wide receiver, I think, is 9.3 or somewhere thereabouts. So that's how I slot the players in for their floor. And that doesn't have anything to do with size, right? That's just their prospect quality. And then we have a second designation, so they can be like an alpha or a bulletproof alpha. And then that tells me this is a player with a really high floor and a really high ceiling. Or a coin flip alpha, where they have a really, you know, they're kind of a hit-and-miss player, but they have a really high ceiling if they do hit. That's like your AJ Browns and guys like that. And then we have, you know, the coin flip betas, where it's like, well, they're probably, they got a 50-50 shot roughly at hitting a top 24 season, but they're probably not going to hit top 12. And if they do, it's probably going to be once. It's going to be like a one-off, like kind of unexpected, like a, you know, Julio Jones goes down and what's his name from the Falcons hits a top 12 season.
Ridley?
Like, I would have never expected Calvin Ridley to have that kind of target share at his size, because we never see guys that size have that kind of target share.
Mm-hmm.
But when Julio Jones goes down, well, now somebody has to catch the ball and Calvin Ridley goes to the moon.
Yeah.
And like, maybe Calvin Ridley is special and he's going to do it year after year after year now. I don't know. We don't know. But generally speaking, they usually don't. So with Devonta Smith, he's someone that fits into that coin flip beta tier, like Jerry Jeudy, like Calvin Ridley, and a whole bunch of other guys that are in that tier. And it's funny that they all come from Alabama, but that's their type, I guess.
Yeah. So with Seth Williams, what do you think for you today, with no landing spots, what would be the earliest you would take him in your rookie drafts to make sure you get your guy?
I have him ranked at 18 in my rookie rankings. So middle of the second round.
Middle second, yeah. And that's one QB?
That is super flex.
Okay. Wow. Okay.
So I got him pretty high.
Yeah. So you wouldn't take him there. You're confident you can let him slip to the late second, early third?
Yeah. Yeah. I would try to take him closer to his ADP. Like, I wouldn't reach on a player a full round above what their rookie draft ADP is. If I was in a rookie draft today, I wouldn't take him at 206, even though that's where I have him ranked. I would, if I had the 206, I would trade back to like 211 or 212 or something like that and take him there. I'd take him a little above his ADP, probably, you know, five spots maybe, but I wouldn't be reaching, you know, 12 spots on him, that's for sure.
Yeah.
I do want to get him though.
Yeah, I can tell. So that's a lot of good stuff on Seth. We're going to get out of here, but I want to know one thing, a strategic move or a player, something you're trying to do in your rookie drafts this year, or something you're trying to avoid altogether in this year's rookie draft. A little bit of advice for the listeners.
I'm staying away from the running backs. I don't mind Travis Etienne, and I have him ranked relatively high. Like, he would be my 102 in one QB leagues. But like, Najee Harris and Javonte Williams are not players that I'm overly excited about. I don't think they're terrible. Like, I think I have them both probably ranked in coin flip once I get the rest of the information that we need to properly grade them. But they're going to be going way too early. Like, they're going to be, you know, top of the first type picks in one QB leagues. And I would sooner just trade back, grab an extra first round pick next year, get a, you know, trade back from like 103 to 112 and grab an extra first next year, something like that, rather than take a Najee Harris or Javonte Williams. I just don't see a high ceiling on either guy. And I don't think their floors are overly high either. So, let me back up for a second. I don't think they're going to be RB1s in fantasy football. And that's, again, what I'm chasing. RB2s are really easy to hit. Like, when you look at RB2 hit rates, they're really, really high. And that's because to be an RB2, you basically just have to be healthy for a year.
Yeah.
If you're healthy for a year, you qualify for RB2 status. Sorry, if you're a starter and you're healthy for a year, you're going to be RB2.
Yeah. If you have that opportunity, you should be able to be a top 24. Absolutely. I'm with you there, dude. And I agree, especially like the later running backs. Like, I'm not trying to fix any of my running back problems in the second round of this. I'm not even looking. If somebody hits, that's fine. But I am avoiding them altogether. I agree with you 100% on that. Tell them anywhere to find where you're crushing your numbers, your Patreon account, your podcast, anything you want to push here. You've plugged a couple awesome people, but it is your turn, Drew.
Sure. I'm on, you know, Twitter at DFB Encounter. And then I do all my rankings on patreon.com /bulletproofff. And that's, you know, the dynasty rankings, the Debbie rankings, the rookie rankings. I got three different versions of rookie rankings: Superflex, Superflex 2QB, and 1QB rankings, because everybody plays in usually some variation of those three settings. And then I just started a podcast I think we just did episode 8 this week. So it's fairly new. I'm still learning how to podcast properly. It's a real learning experience, but check it out. I think it's pretty good. Bulletproof Fantasy Football Podcast. It's on, I think, every platform at this point. And then we have the YouTube channel, which I think is an excellent builder on the podcast. The podcast comes out first, and then the YouTube videos come out the following week, and it's the same content. There's no change, but it gives you the visuals that goes with it. It's a little easier to visualize what I'm talking about. So check out that too.
Yeah, that is awesome, man. Love it. If you did not get it, it is at DF Bean Counter on Twitter. Follow him, all his work. Download, subscribe, 5-star review. I'm Swagzilla0G. This is at Rookie Fever. Thanks a lot, Drew. This has been a lot of fun.
Thanks for having me.
I feel smarter going into the second half of my day. Be sure to follow the voices of at Artvark TV, The Feverish Fenero, at FF _ Spaceman, Dave Wright himself. Been crushing it on these player profiles. Drew's quiet.